Hello, racing fans. Edison Hatter back with this week's episode of First Over with Edison Hatter to discuss some racing action. We got a lot of it to cover. We've got some Saturday night Wood by Mohawk action. It is Preakness Saturday, May the 21st, 2022. And I'm happy to be joined once again by Garnett Barnsdale, who, if it's not more than Robert Reed Jr. for the most appearances on the show, Garnett, you're definitely at least adding another one here tonight.
Well, glad, Hatter. I'm always happy to join. And, you know, anytime you call on me, I will be here.
Well, I suppose we have several things to discuss, but I guess we'll start, or at least I will start, by a couple of thank yous and great appreciation this week. I will be at the Preakness tomorrow, one of my favorite weekends of the year, so I'm very grateful to James Witherite for filling in for me at Freehold Raceway. He did a great job calling the races today. I was actually downstairs charting today, so I was at Freehold charting while James called, and James will be on the mic again for us tomorrow at Freehold Raceway. And tomorrow night, Garnett, someone we both know very well, Ray Catolo, on the mic at Rosecroft Raceway. So come on, Garnett, you definitely got to watch and wager some Rosecroft now tomorrow night, don't you?
You do, especially with Ray calling. Hopefully he plays it straight and isn't too Ray-ish. But I don't want to get his ego too big, but Ray's actually an excellent race caller from what I've heard so far.
I will agree with that as well, and I will look forward to hearing some myself, and I will catch some in person as well. I will be leaving the Preakness after the last race tomorrow evening, and I will be at Rosecroft. You can look for me on air tomorrow night on Rosecroft's feed. We will do some end-of-meet awards, I believe, after race 11 tomorrow night. We've got a trotter of the meet to give out, a pacer of the meet, and we have our trainer's title wrapped up for certain. John Wagner is at least 13, 14, 15 clear of the second place in the trainer standing, so that race is wrapped up. But we have a very interesting battle in the driver standings. Jonathan Roberts, with 6 wins on Wednesday night, has now opened up a 1-race lead over Russell Foster. So 70 wins for Jonathan Roberts, 69 for Russell Foster. 13 races tomorrow night. They both got several drives, so we should have a very interesting inclusion to that driver's race. So definitely check out some Freehold and Rosecroft tomorrow in your free time. And Garnett, we also have the Preakness tomorrow, of course, the big race in lovely Baltimore, Maryland. So, Garnett, any thoughts on the Preakness from you?
I think Epicenter is going to be really hard to beat based on, I think he ran probably the best race in the Derby, just was unlucky the way that the pace and kind of everything went. But, I think if you can get 7-5 on him or whatever, it's be one of the rare cases we get value on a favorite. And, people, once a year types are going to be betting every number and name, and everybody thinks now anything can happen because the long shot won the Derby. So that might be where you get the value. I got to ask, though, you're everywhere. You go everywhere. How do you afford gas right now?
Oh, gosh. And, it's even worse. I drive my dear little Mercedes that takes premium gas. So, that's a topic I try not to think about too much.
Wow. Premium gas. Look at you go. You must be making a fortune at all these jobs you do.
Yeah, I wish. Anyway, Garnett, so from what we can read into it, they showed it on the broadcast this afternoon on the USA Network for the Black Eyed Susan broadcast, the current odds for the Preakness. And much like the Derby odds, 24 hours before the race, I don't know how much you can read into it. There's at least, probably 6 figures already in the pool, but obviously there'll be much more money to be bet tomorrow. But for what it's worth, Epicenter is currently even money, but here's the very interesting one for you, Garnett, to figure out. Fenwick, who 50-1 on the morning line, and look, you know what? I'm sure I would have said it about Rich Strike in the Derby, so famous last words to say, he probably should be higher, but he probably should be higher. He's currently 6 or 7 to 1 in the early wagering. So I guess everyone's in on the long shot this time.
That's bizarre. 6 or 7 to 1. It's funny you mention, uttering things about horses. But the very last thing I said before they went in the gate for Mind That Birds Derby was, I know for sure there's only one horse that can't win this race, and that's who it was. So I think especially with the Derby, you got to be careful not to utter comments that could be turned into gold formula.
Well, like I said, I continue to brag about it just to make myself feel better, even though it gives me $0. But, my big win bet was on Tis the Bomb. So I picked the right race to come out of. I thought it was going to be a big price. I did look at him because I looked at Tis the Bomb because I wasn't sure whether he was going to take to the dirt. I looked at Tawny Port. I wasn't sure. You know, he seemed like he got it pretty easy in Lexington last time out. And, of course, I looked at Rich Strike as well, coming out of that same common race down at Turfway. And I personally, admittedly, just didn't think he was quick enough to go with these. But otherwise, I probably would have honestly, legitimately kind of given him a look. But anyway, that's my rant that still gives me $0 in the bankroll. So, you know.
Yeah, I had a pretty good ticket going on Zandon that would have paid, I think it was a $10 pick three that was paying over $1,000. And for $10, not for a dollar. And I thought he looked great turning for home. And I think the last eighth of a mile was just too far for him. He just couldn't do it. He hung.
Alternatively, I know someone who had, I believe, 18-1 on a future bet on Epicenter. So that also had to be a pretty tough one to swallow coming down to the line for sure. So with that, Garnett, Preakness tomorrow, 7:01 p.m. post time. But also going on, well, also this weekend, we've got some other sports action, Garnett, and I'm sure you got some opinions, at least for me, for maybe some NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, PGA Golf Championship. You got any other sports opinions for us?
I'm not a golf guy much. I know you are more than me, so I'm not going to comment on that much. I think, you know, as far as the NBA goes, I think the Warriors are going to win. I really do. I think the more I see them, even when they play poorly, they win. You know, like that one game, they had a million turnovers against the Grizzlies. They still managed to win. I just think they're going to be really hard for anybody to win a game on their home court. And they just seem to be, you know, gelling. And I think if Draymond Green, to me, is the difference maker, as long as he can stay on the court, not do anything stupid to get suspended, I think they're going to be really, really hard to beat.
Yeah, it does seem like, you know, it's funny. I was watching Daily Wager or whatever, one of the sports gambling shows on ESPN the other day. And it's funny that they were debating, you know, if you had to pick to bet a future bet right now in the NBA on the, you know, the four teams left, who would you pick? And it's funny that the one guy was just determined that, you know, the Warriors at even money right now is, you know, actually great value considering how likely he thinks they are to win. And alternatively, the other guy was saying he would basically take even money on the Celtics, and he thinks that he can get 2-1 on them right now is just absurd. So, wow. You know, I guess the joy of gambling, everyone has an opinion.
What if you got 5-1 on the Warriors like I did?
Well, then that definitely sounds a lot better. I feel pretty good about where you're sitting right now, but to be fair, I mean, admittedly, I don't follow the NBA super closely, but I don't really think anyone exactly saw the Game 7 coming that happened between the Suns and the Mavericks. So, you know, you got to play the game for a reason, right?
Yeah, I just think, I don't know. I mean, the Mavericks, as long as they have to neutralize Luka, right? And they did that very well in Game 1, but, you know, it's going to be interesting. I don't think they're... I don't know. I don't see them going much past 5 games in this series. I just think they got too much. You could see in the first game they were double, triple, quadruple teaming Luka, and there's nobody else that can really do it for Dallas that I've seen consistently. And they just have – the Warriors have way too many weapons. When Klay Thompson's hitting shots, they're unbeatable. Like, he had a terrible – he didn't have a very good game in Game 1, and they still won easily. Anyways, hockey, I don't know. I'm kind of – it's kind of dead to me since the Leafs got knocked out. I don't follow it that closely anyways. And I turn it on for the playoffs with the Leafs, watch them get knocked out of the first round every year, and then I go back to whatever else I'm doing.
Well, for the record, as we're speaking now, and I'm sure you probably got it up in the background for you as well, middle of the first quarter, it is 20-8 Dallas right now over Golden State as we continue talking here. But as for hockey, yeah, also with you, not something I admittedly follow super closely, but I know that the Avalanche are a pretty heavy favorite, I believe, to – win the entire tournament. I believe they are, yeah, plus 195 or so to win the Stanley Cup, and a couple second choices at like 4-9-2, 5-1 kind of range. So the Avalanche appear to be the team that they are settling. In fact, here's the bet right now on FanDuel.com. The field is minus 265. The Avalanche are plus 194. So there's basically, you know, if you want the field versus the Avalanche as a wager, you can indeed get that right now.
I like that bet. I don't really like laying all that juice, though. How much would I mean, how much are you going to bet to hope that they stumble? But hockey, I don't know. Hockey's – you don't often see the heavy favorite win in hockey, I don't think.
I don't know. Admittedly, not a trend I really follow, so I will take your word for that. But I will say FanDuel seems to do a lot of those because, you know, it's funny. I was just looking at it the other day. The French Open is coming up next week in tennis world. And I know that they also did some interesting ones in terms of like, oh gosh, wait, let me see if I can find this, how they called it. I think it's supposed to be like futures of like the big guns versus the field. So basically, you know, your top two versus the field, and it's kind of intriguing odds, actually, if you got an opinion either way. So for the women's tournament, it's, you know, Iga Swiatek, who's for sure the one to beat, and Simona Halep, which is kind of interesting, Garnett. I'm assuming you don't follow tennis super closely, but, you know, 128-person draw. These two are both in the upper first quadrant, so they would have to face off against one another in, like, the round of 16. So you're pretty much guaranteed, at the very least, only one of them can make it to the final eight.
Right.
So that's kind of an intriguing bet. So Swiatek and Halep, they're actually minus 145 versus the field at plus 110. So I don't know. I find that to be a pretty intriguing wager there personally.
So you get both of them for minus, for plus 145?
For minus 145 and the field at plus 110. And obviously, let's put it this way. If you're going to bet on, in my opinion, if you're going to bet Swiatek and Halep, you may as well just bet Swiatek straight or Halep straight, because if that's the way you feel, I think you just got to bet either, you know, Swiatek at minus 125 and get a little bit better, or you got to bet Simona Halep at 10-1. I don't see the argument in betting both of them together personally in that
one. Right. Case. Yeah, it makes sense.
And likewise, the men's kind of a similar story. You can get Rafael Nadal and Djokovic at plus 100 versus the field at minus 130, and that one I think I'd be a little bit trickier on. Obviously, Nadal is king of clay, but been struggling a little bit lately. So he's plus 440 overall. Novak Djokovic is plus 190 to win the whole thing. So that one, I would have a difficult time picking a side of that one, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, move on to golf real quick, and then we'll move on to some back to some racing. For golf, Garnett, also one I know you don't follow super closely, but it's intriguing going into the weekend. First things first, they're in Oklahoma this week, and it was 90-ish degrees today. It will be 60 tomorrow after a big cold front comes through with some precipitation. Very strong winds tomorrow, so a difficult day for scoring. And you've got two in front that don't have much experience. Will Zalatoris, admittedly, has played very well in majors, but a very young, newer player, and not a very good putter. So I've got to think, you know, if he continues to stay in front, the weekend stress really starting to get to him. Him is the plus 230 favorite right now. I would definitely fade against. Mito Pereira right behind him at plus 550. I'll be honest, probably famous last word, but I really don't give him much of a look here. Rory McIlroy played phenomenally day one. Today was not spectacular for him. I believe he's three or four shots back now. Actually, it might be five shots back.
Five, I'm looking at it.
Yeah, he's five back. He is plus 700. He is 2-for-2 in majors when leading after the first round, but today was a little uninspiring to me, but he normally does play very well on the weekend in majors. So
what's his record when leading after the first round and then five strokes behind after the second round?
Yeah, don't think that one happened before. I'm pretty sure the other two times – I don't think he was leading necessarily after the second round in the other two, but I do not believe it was five back. but with that in mind, I think Justin Thomas is the play here, plus 400, if that's the way anyone's going to go. The way it worked out, the guys that played in the morning today had much, much worse weather conditions than the guys in the afternoon. So Justin Thomas shooting 300 today, and the weather conditions that he did this morning was actually a sneakily very, very good round. And in fact, that 6-under total score for him stayed in front for quite some time until Mito Pereira and Will Zalatoris passed him. But my opinion, I think the experience of Thomas won majors in the past, you know, I think that will that class will shine through on the weekend, and he would be the play for me personally. But, the joy of sports, as we said, upsets happen, so it's definitely going to be exciting to watch. But I will be on the record, and I can be bashed if I'm wrong on this, but I still think Zalatoris is a plus 230 favorite is not spectacular.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was looking at the odds this morning or last night, and I thought the same thing with McIlroy was down to like plus 230 or something, because what do you have, a four-stroke lead or something after the first round? And I'm like,
he was only up one, but, you know, the reason he was the price that he was just obviously looking at his history when he leads after round one. And, you know, it happened in the Masters, to be fair. Scottie Scheffler just kind of hiding there after round one, kind of in that spot. And all of a sudden you get to the end of round two and he's up, you know, by six. Tiger Woods has done it plenty of times, you know, just kind of lurking right there with the leaders after day one. All of a sudden he's up six. So, you know, if you could predict that he was going to do that today in theory, then for sure you wanted to jump one to the plus 230. But obviously hindsight's 20/20. And at this point, yeah, you did not want that.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, even in my mind, when I looked at it, I didn't want it. I'm like, I couldn't bet this at plus 230 with 54 holes to go. As you wouldn't do it with Zalatoris now, probably, right?
Yeah, I probably would not. I would. I mean, I just, I mean, to be fair, his record in majors has been very good. He finished second in Augusta last year, you know, at the Masters. So, I mean, you know, young player, he's done very well in majors, but, you know, it's just this, it's just some real issues on the putting green, it seems like, with the short ones and whatnot. And I just think, you know, Hideki Matsuyama started the Masters last year with a four-shot lead into the final day. He ends up winning by one, but Zalatoris never really, per se, was going to – never led on that last day and was never really, truly threatening to win, really, you know?
Right.
If he stays in front in this tournament, I think that pressure is really going to start to build, and I don't know that he's ready for it yet. And, I mean, he totally could be, but even if he is, I don't think it's worth getting less than 5-2 to find out if he's ready for it.
No, I agree.
Well, with that, Garnett, we will go to something that I think you got a little bit of a stronger opinion on. Sunday evening at Flamborough Downs, we have a $273,500 race, as race number 10 is the Charles Jurevinsky Memorial Cup Final. We have the top three finishers from the eliminations last week. It's a field of nine, and full disclosure, admittedly, Garnett, I tried to watch a little bit last week, kind of got busy with stuff, so I didn't really see a whole lot of this, so I'll be relying on your expertise here, but what I can read is that we have Bulldog Hanover as a 6-5 favorite, 8-5 Lewis Pearlman, and Charlie May was 2-1, who I know I mentioned to you. I never saw the race, but I know he finished third and was defeated last night. But those three draw very well here. They're the inside three and likely the three to beat.
Yeah, and man, does this line up to be a really good race. You got Bulldog, who came out and set a track record with 54-3 opening half and a 55 back half, kind of leading clear lead all the way last week. Didn't get much of a challenge. He was probably in the weaker elimination. But that being said, that was a pretty impressive mile. Lewis Pearlman from the rail was only making his second start of the year. He had a pretty tough trip in his first start, cutting a 54 half, getting picked off by a buck of Bet Hanover. So Gingras took a bit of a more patient approach, and he still almost caught Bulldog. He's only a half length back at the wire after being fourth at the half. So you have to think, no matter what, going for 273,000. These two are going to protect position leaving the gate, right, from the inside two posts. So they're probably going to line up 1-2. I see probably Charlie May dropping in third. You know, you got Rocky Road Hanover, one of the other division winners in the four hole. And the horse who, in my mind, had the most impressive race of anybody last week, Line Drive Hanover in the five hole. And what happened last week was, you know, James McDonald from the seven hole, I guess in his head, figured, I got to try and leave a little bit with this horse to make the final. And he ended up six wide going into the first turn. So he had no choice but to take back. He managed to force himself into fifth, going to the quarter. When he pulled at the half, he ended up third over, you know, behind Desperate Man and Charlie May. Sorry, Desperate Man and who's the other one that was there? Anyways, he was third over, and he was kind of got lost ground going around the last turn, pulled wide. Both he and Desperate Man closed down the middle of the track, and they both caught Charlie May right on the wire. But Line Drive Hanover was airborne at the wire. He just ran out of racetrack because he had too far to come. To me, you know, Desperate Man, one of the other elimination winners, has the eight hole. It's going to be really hard for him to work out a winning trip from out there. So it's going to probably be one of the inside five. And, you know, Line Drive Hanover's 9-2 in the morning line. I think if you can get somewhere around there, he's only been beaten once this year. He won 10 in a row before last week. And the race kind of shapes up for him to get a nice second over trip here, I think. You got to think if Lewis Pearlman and Bulldog go and they don't let anybody go, Charlie May's probably going to be first up. Maybe Line Drive can come second up. So, man, does this just, with the five inside horses drawn the way they are, this line just lines up to be an outstanding race. And I think there's going to be some value. I think you can make a case for any one of those five, really.
Well, you know, Garnett, I always love putting you or whoever my guest is on the spot when it comes to odds. So I guess the answer, well, it might not be an obvious answer. So we'll ask, who is the favorite here? What is their price at post time?
I think Bulldog Hanover's favored because of his mile last week and because it's, you know, sub 150 in his first start of the year, drawing the two hole. I think 6-5 might be close, maybe 6-5, 7-5. They're going to bet the other two inside horses, Lewis Pearlman, Charlie May. There's going to be some value on this board. To me, this isn't a race to take the favorite. I mean, maybe Bulldog comes out and you know, repeats that mile and cuts a 54 half and 121 to the three quarters. They don't catch him, but you have to think there's going to be more action, right? Like I don't see him having a 3-length lead at the three quarters with all these horses in this race now, as opposed to just, you know, last week he had Luz Pearlman and Dean B. Hanover and the like. Now they're all in here. So, I wouldn't take 7-5 on him. There's no doubt he can win the race. I'm not disputing that, but I think this is a race where, you know, a horse like Line Drive Hanover, this could be his coming out party. I mean, this is what he's been gearing up for all year, right? He's been working through his conditions one after the other, just dominating weaker. But last week, he really showed me something with this second by a head from the 7 hole against really good horses. So James McDonald, really, honestly, since the spring of last year, can do no wrong. He's in a zone like I've never seen up here since maybe the days of Ron Waples. And, you know, we know he's good in big races. He won lots of them already, you know, both down south and up here. So he's got ice in his veins. I'm going to side with Line Drive Hanover in this race and hope to get somewhere around 9-2. I think it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, my argument would be, even if you do, per se, like Bulldog Hanover, I mean, that's probably one of the better prices you're going to see on him for a while. Alternatively, I mean, if you like Charlie May, you've been kind of, you know, you were stuck with 1-9 on the elimination race. You're clearly not going to see that tonight. Line Drive, you've watched him be 1-9, obviously, against much weaker fields, but, you know, you're going to get a price here. So, but yeah, you know what? If forced to make a selection here, I would have to agree with your logic. I've got to think that it lines up 1-2-2-1 early. Pretty much everyone else in seats, and that probably leaves Charlie May providing some pretty nice cover for Rocky Road or Line Drive or both, right? So I definitely think someone maybe just off of it there could be the way, but alternatively, the other direction could be Bulldog going all the way on the front end. I can see that as well. So I agree with you. I think, you know, and obviously I guess it's true for a lot of races, but, you know, I think tactics off of the gate will dictate a lot of how this race goes.
You can also easily see Luz Pearlman beating him this time because he's in the pocket turning for home and he's got the passing lane, as opposed to being, you know, 4 lengths back in third, trying to get around a horse that couldn't keep up to him at the three quarters. So there's lots of ways you can go here. I think the key is getting value. If you like Bulldog Hanover and 7-5 is your price and he's 7-5, then you bet. I don't personally want that, but some people might think it's a great price. That's what makes parimutuel wagering so good.
So, Dornan, I'll ask you, just because I know you follow the circuit a lot closer than me, but in my personal anecdotal experience, which is not too many times, but it seems to me, anytime I'm getting a perfect trip, I feel like, in the pocket with a horse at Flamborough, and I've got every chance to pass in the passing lane in the stretch, it never seems to get by for me. I don't know. Is that just poor experiences on my end, or is there something to that?
You have to have the king of the passing lane of the bike, Paul McKenzie. That the name is the McKenzie Lane. If he's driving, you'll get up. No, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I honestly don't know. I seem to get beat up that passing lane more often than not, so we must be betting different horses or something.
Oh, for me, that's Northfield. It's Northfield. For some reason, it just seems like magically opens up at the inside whenever I don't need it to.
Right.
But anyway, that should be a fantastic card on Sunday evening, and that is going to be a scheduled post time. It would appear 10:20 p.m. First post time is 6:55 p.m., and actually that's an 11-race card with some pretty good Ontario Sire Stakes on there as well. So a pretty good card for sure, and Garnett, you'll have some full selection somewhere, right?
I will have full selections on the Ontario Racing website under the Tips from the Pros section, also on my Facebook page, and I'll be tweeting it out from my Twitter handle, which is at GoCashKing. Also, the Ontario Racing account tweets out the picks daily.
Well, Garnett, the only other program I have sitting here with me that I doubt you have much opinion on, but obviously we discussed that Ray Cotolo is announcing a Rosecroft tomorrow, and the rumor has it he's told me that we're going to be betting Hong Kong to like 6 a.m. after he's done calling. So you have any opinions on tomorrow night's Sha-Tin program?
I don't, but if you're going to do that, then you might as well just stay awake the whole and get rolled right into Great Britain. I mean, what's the point of sleeping at that point at 6 in the morning? As long as you're not broke, of course.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think I've me personally, I guess you and Ray are different animals, but I don't think I've ever had like a 5 a.m. get-out race before. That'd be a new experience for me personally.
Oh, you haven't lived.
Midnight get-out race, sure, but 5 a.m. get-out race, that could be a new one.
Well, see, you're open to new experiences here.
Well, we have some Mohawk action to discuss, and we got several good featured races, a good pick five sequence, a lot of good races on the Saturday night card. but it could be Garnett. I think we both agree, especially given the prices of our pick five tickets, could be a little formful early on.
Yeah, I think it has the potential to be chalky pick five, but there's a couple of races that to me look somewhat wide open that maybe could make it pay. If you can get the right ticket, I guess.
Well, we will jump into giving out our tickets with race one. It is 5-year-olds and youngers, non-winners of three races of 47,000 lifetime, Pacers for purse of 19,000, kicks off that 20-cent, $100,000 guaranteed early pick five races, 1 through 5. And Garnett, who do you start it with here?
I started with a single, Greatest Ending, being sent out by Dr. Ian Moore. Greatest Ending came out on a 5/8 mile track, the Meadows, on a track rated 1 second slow, a good track, and proceeded to rip off a 151 and 2 mile in his sophomore debut. I think, to me, I know he's facing older here, and he's probably got bigger fish to fry, including more Pennsylvania Sire Stakes, but he lays over these, and I think he jogs here at a very short price with James McDonald on the bike.
So probably could be a mistake on my end, but I chose to actually go deep here. I actually took 5 of them in here. That includes the 6, which is going to be a mistake, of course, should he win and jog as you predict that he will. But there was a couple other ones in here I didn't dislike. The 1, Rockaway Bay, post 10 last time out, closes with a pretty good back half there, 26-2 coming home, gets the rail tonight. The 2, Chickaboom, comes off of 2 qualifiers, making his 3-year-old debut. 5 wins last year from 8 starts. Some Ontario Sire Stakes action on some of the smaller tracks, came here to win a non-winners of 1 event here at Mohawk, and looked pretty good in that qualifier last time out as well. We will use the 8, Stop the Shooting, who feels like one I've kind of been chasing here a little while, which never seems to be a good thing when I get to chasing a horse in particular, but that win 4 back, like that night, then kind of kept chasing here for a while, and the last time I was just a disaster in that SBOA final race, so we'll see how this one does here in this spot, although we'll have to work from post 8. And the 9, Sports Report, kind of a similar tale. A non-winners of 4 company drops back down to this non-winners of 3. 3 wins this year, so one who does find the winner's circle a little bit here and there. So I will go 1, 2, 6, 8, 9, and hopefully not end up with the short price favorite, but definitely within the realm of possibilities.
I think you're going way too deep in this race. The only other one I would consider would be the 1.
That would be my second choice, at least, so for what it's worth. That would be my 2 if I was only forced to pick 2. But that's the race I personally thought, if not the 6, that's the one where I thought there's a chance of a price. The rest of this, I think, it's fairly formful. And in particular, race 2, SBOA final, 3-year-old Philly Trot for over $150,000. Garnett, do we start with 2 singles from you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I watched the Derek Castle last week. You know, Mischievous Rose took a lot of money. She was probably 2-1 up until about 2 or 3 minutes to post when all the big money came in at Derek Castle. And Mischievous Rose is a nice filly, but she gave futile chase once Derek Castle made the front. And I don't know that Derek Castle was particularly tight for this race, that race last week. She's just too good. Unless something bizarre happens, I don't see her getting beat here. She's probably going to be 1-9 again.
Not much to add for me. I'll take the 6 as a single as well, but I guess I'll ask you, Garnett, since I will go back to you for odds. What is the 6-6 early daily double return for $2?
I think there's a potential it could pay $290. I think it'll pay less. The double will pay less than the horse pays to win in the first race. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I can agree with that. That's definitely been a possibility. Yeah, it's less than 1-2 on the parlay. We'll go with that as the statement. Yeah, I'll agree with that. race 3, we have Pacers. It's conditioned non-winners of 5,600 in their last 5 starts, non-winners of 12,800 in their last 8 starts for a purse of 15,000. How about here?
All right, I got a price horse here for you, except before I say that, I'm trying to quickly open the entries because I don't have the morning line in front of me to make sure I'm not telling a lie. Yeah, number 6, Good and Sweet, 15-1 in the morning line. I made several dozens of hundreds of dollars April 2nd when this horse won at 45-1. And I went back to him last week at 55-1 from the 7 hole. And he didn't get the best trip. He was sitting 4th on the rail at the 3 quarters. The 2 in front of him looked like they were going to pull out, so Colin Kelly kind of stayed put. And it didn't work out. He was twisting and turning and changing direction for the entire stretch drive. Finally, he got some room and just kind of finished moderately at the end. But if you're looking for a price horse to juice this pick five up, he might be the one. I'm using three other horses, starting with the eight, Pipe Wrench Charlie, mostly on the barn change. You know, he changed hands. He was sold to the Cullens. Jody Cullen takes over the training. He gets Lasix. All kinds of angles staring you in the face here. The problem being the horse hasn't raced in 6 weeks, so hopefully you get a price there because of that. Island Beach Boy I thought was pretty good last week, racing first up. Only beaten a length in three quarters to Flying Even Better, who I'm pretty sure has already come back to win. I think it was on Monday night, unless I got him confused with a different horse. And the other one I'm using is number one, Shadow in Red. Drops in class here. You know, he's beaten two and three lengths of the class higher. I think it's just a case. He hasn't won a race this year, but I think it's a case of he may have finally found a field where he, you know, he just lands on the right spot and wins. So I went 1-6-7-8, but I'm really hoping for a good and sweet upset here.
Well, I won't give out quite adventurous of a price play as you, but I like the one Shadow in Red like you, who is our morning line favorites. We're both on that one, but the two, No Better Joy at 8-1 is the one that I will go to. Second time out for the Carmen House Yellow Barn. Was a extremely lukewarm favorite last time out against Similar at 3:15 to win. Ended up in that outer flow, just never really advanced. I'm not sure what to think of that effort, but I'm willing to give him another chance. Draws post two again, and I mean, two Carmen House Yellows in the race, you always take the better price of the two stablemates, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never really bought into that. I mean, I think for the one time out of 50 it happens, everybody tweets about it, and I don't know. I'm not that guy. But, you know, run with it.
You know, it's funny. Every time I actually do bet the bigger price of stablemates, the shorter price wins. And whenever I bet the shorter price one, the longer price one. So that's usually the way it goes for me.
That's similar to the bridge jumpers. I've never had a bridge jumper that I bet against run out of the money. Never. At some point, you think one of them is going to run out of the money because it happens. And, you know, you have show bets on all others. You make a pile of money. I've never done it yet. But anyways, yeah, I mean, it happens, obviously, but I've never seen it. I've never understood why people think this is some kind of an angle. Like, you think guys are entering horses and they only try with the one that's a higher. Like, it's just a weird. The whole thing's a weird idea to me.
Now, for the record, now I've said this, Garnett. I'm sure you and I know several others will crucify me for this because everyone has different opinions. But look, I'm still of the opinion, especially Charlestown, where I can get $220 on it on the $2 minimum payout. I'm still of the opinion there's spots that I'm okay bridge jumping in the sense that if the horse is at a greater than 90% chance to show, a 220 payout on a $2 bet implies, you know, value in that sense. So long story short, I'm of the opinion that I will bridge jump in some spots. I have never understood the argument of bridge jumping, though, really in harness racing in general, and especially on young trotters. Like, I think Venerable was even bridge jumped a couple times last year. Like, I know how good she was, but then you saw the Breeders' Crown elimination, you know, so... Again, that's mean it's okay with bridge jumpers in general, but oof, man, I would really struggle to do it on harness racing in general, and especially young horses, and especially trotters.
I agree with all of that. I still don't want to bet to make 10 cents on the dollar ever, but it's better, you know, it's better than betting the 210 payouts, I guess.
And yeah, that too, like I said, I really particularly favor the 220 Charlestown. I would be hard pressed to find a spot where I will take 210. Although, you know, I'll tell you where I've taken 210 before. I don't know if it was a glitch in their system or who knows what. Pocatello Downs in Idaho a couple years ago. Three horse field.
I know what you're going to tell me. They allowed show betting.
Yes, they did.
That happened to me once too. And I don't remember what track it was. No, that happened. They allowed the show bet. And then after the race, they said there was no show betting. I don't remember what track that was.
They put it up on the board. They paid 210 on all three of them to show. But now my question was, and I'm sure the answer is probably, yes, I do get screwed. Quarter horse race, Pocatello Downs 300 yards. If I lose a jockey, I probably lose my money, right?
Yeah, it wouldn't pay. I don't think it could.
So I kind of envisioned two ways that story ended for me. I figured either I don't actually get paid or I lose the jockey. But yeah, no, it did pay. So, you know.
There you go.
But anyway, we will move on to race four. This is another SBOA final, three-year-old Philly Pace going for $147,000. And who do you go with here?
You're going to have another big favorite in this race, Silver Label. I watched her qualifier. She won it really easily in a track rated off 2 seconds in the slop. The only two races she lost last year was the Prohibition Legal, the best two-year-old filly in the nation. The only race Prohibition Legal lost was to Nikki Hill, the best 2-year-old filly in North America. So how's that for a frame of reference? That being said, I'm not singling her. I'm going to also add the one, DeWitt for Josie, who I liked last week, was a spot play for me. I was a little disappointed I only got 2-1, but she was in the pocket and kind of got bottled up early in the stretch. It took her a while to find some room. The favorite eventually drifted out, or the leader did, and she shot up the inside, and she made up a lot of ground really fast at the end to catch in the mood, who had the momentum on the far outside. So DeWitt for Josie is kind of a horse that I liked last year that I've kind of been following. So I'm going to add her just to have another horse in here. You know, I don't want 3 1-to-9 shot singles. What's the point of even playing a ticket then? So I'm going to use 1 and 5 in this race.
So I know we discussed this off the record before we started, Garnett, so you know what I'm going to say here, and that is that if I'm going to go 5 deep in the first race, my secondary backup, in case I do get a heavy favorite in that first leg, is I've got to go against some sort of heavy favorite somewhere along here, or this thing will pay nothing, because if it chalks out, we all know it can pay a bunch of nothing. So I'm going to go against the 5 Silver Label here, who I agree with you is probably going to be the deserved favorite, but 3 qualifiers this year, a vet 6 scratch from her only scheduled start so far. Yes, Galucci usually has them ready. Yes, she's most likely ready to go, but I got to find a spot to take a stand somewhere. So this is where I do it, and I will end up instead with the 2 and the 4 in here, and I forget what Ray Catolo and I went with last week, but Garnett, can you help us out? Pronunciation on the 2?
The 2 would be called Québécois.
Okay, that is what we believe we went with. So, okay, we will go with Québécois. You know, 25-2 last time out, kicked home pretty strongly there. Wasn't able to quite get there, though. Obviously, you discussed Do It for Josie, who ended up getting there. But, you know, ended up getting, I thought, a pretty good trip overall. So, you know, Québécois came a little further back. So I'm going to rate that race a little higher. And then the 4 In the Mood ended up also in that outer flow likewise. Was trying to kick home late to get for Do It for Josie and wasn't able to get there. So those are the 2 I will use. I will take the stand against Silver Label. But, well, I guess, Garnett, so we could almost continue on. I don't know. Are you allowed? I guess you can't in Canada. But I think, like, overseas, you can give, like, you know, much like you bet a sports parlay, you can get, like, horse parlays, like, on different races, right? So if you could offer, like, a horse parlay on Greatest Ending, Adair Castle, and Silver Label, what does that pay?
Oh, my.
Are we up to like $3?
Probably about 1-2. Maybe 3-5.
Oh, come on. If I'm getting 290 for the early double, I got to get at least like 340 now at this point, right?
I guess. So if you're betting $3 on this horse and she's going to go off at 2-5, then you're going to get, well, 320. No, wait a minute. If you're betting $3 on her at 2-5... 420. So it should be even money. Yeah, it should be about even money.
Okay, well then there you go. There's a bookie. Go find a book to take that bet if you want that parlay, I suppose.
Exactly.
Well, we will turn next to race 5, the payoff leg. Non-winners of 8,000 in their last 5 are non-winners of 18,800 in their last 8. Pacers for purse of 18,000. And Garnett, this was the other one that I thought maybe had some possibilities in here of different directions to go. I think the betting board could be okay here in this race.
Yeah, me too. I could see, I'm just scanning through it now, I could see about 7 different horses having a shot at winning this race. I'm not going 7 deep. I'm going to go 3 deep, starting with 2 Legion Sealster, moving from post 10 to the 2-hole, coming off a good, really good mile where he made 2 moves and was only beaten half a length to is it Outlaw Grabbing Gears? Here's a question for you. Or Outlaw Grabbing Ears. If he's a descendant of Grin from Ear to Ear, then it has to be Outlaw Grabbing Ears. Right?
I'm going to agree. Look, you know what? My one pet peeve, I think I've said this before. Pet peeve is an announcer. Nothing personal against them, but oh man, one named horses. Got to figure all that out, you know? Yeah, sometimes I look at the program ahead of time, so I'm sitting here like trying to call post parade and just trying to like, oh, gosh, what even does that say?
Okay, back to the schedule program. Number 9 is I'm going to use as well, Ideal Perception. I thought he raced well last week. 2nd to Flying Even Better, who's kind of hot right now. And the 10, Highland Beach Lover, I think is really hard to leave out. He's taken a pretty big class drop here from numbers of 16,000 last 5 to numbers 8,000 last 5. You know, the only thing is if he misses another check here, he gets to drop even further next week and maybe gets a better post. But he hasn't had a check in three starts, so I think they're probably going to be rolling with him from the far outside. And this is a much easier field than facing the likes of East End, Mapo's Lion, Line Drive, Hanover, Revolt, Jimmy Freight. You know, those are the horses he's been racing against in his last five. And six starts back at a higher, one class higher, he won by a length in the non-winners of 12,200 last five. So I think you have to have him in there. I'm using 2, 9, and 10 in this leg.
Well, I do not use the – I use the 10 in here, Garnett, and not the 1. So that pretty quickly shoots down the theory that I purely go for the longer price of stablemate. So I will take the shorter price of the Osceola horses here, the 10 Highland Beach Lover, as you mentioned, drop down in class. Post 10 to work with those. Had two tough posts in recent times as well there with the post 7 and a post 9. But this seems to be a pretty significant drop. I mean, this is a horse in early April that took over – after the half and rolled home as the 6-8-5 favorite there against non-winners of 12,000. So this is a little bit even softer spot than that. So it definitely looks to be a winnable spot even from post 10. And the 3 Captain Video is the other one that I'll end up using, who gets a little bit of class relief as well. Non-winners 11 last time out, although quite a few in this race come from similar anyway. But it's coming from off of it there and is closing to it pretty well lately. A 50-4 mile, a 52-1. Finished second, 2 back, only lost by a length and a 4th place effort last time out. So I think this one could be close as well late. So I will go 3-10. But like you, there are several horses on here I circled and gave possible chances. But again, given the possibilities leading into this race, don't really want to spend too much money here.
Yeah, I mean, look, if this comes in with Greatest Ending, a Derek Castle, Silver Label, and Legion Sealster all winning, this thing might pay less than 15-1.
So the record on the payout on record, I believe, at least that I've seen recently, was Western Fair a couple weeks ago. Wasn't it 250 something for a 20-cent ticket?
I think so. It was a lot of like 2-5, 1-5 shots that night.
I don't believe we can get to that. So I think the record is safe there. But if it chalks out, it definitely could be pretty short, so that's why we both stay cheap. For you, it's $4.80 with a 6-6 with 1-6-7-8 with 1-5 with 2-9-10. And I will go with an $8 play, 1-2-6-8-9 with 6 with 1-2 with 2-4 with 3-10.
I'm going to bet a couple extra tickets with Good and Sweet, who I think is a – here's an angle I'm interested in asking if you believe in. Do you believe in good luck horses? Horses you bet, they win. You bet them again, they win. You bet them again, they always seem to win when you bet them. I've had about maybe a dozen of those in my life, either thoroughbreds or standardbreds.
Yeah, I can think of a couple random ones here and there. Yeah, there are those ones that it seems like.
It's rare. It's not like it happens every week, month, or year. But every once in a while, there's a horse that just seems like – and then, you know, after – and it's not like I say, you know, I won on this horse last time, I'm going to bet him this time. I'm handicapping races and stuff. But once I start to realize it, like after 3 or 4 times hitting on a horse, if I see him in the 5th time, I'm just going to bet him. I'm just going to include him in, no matter what at that point.
I'll tell you one I'm pretty convinced on is I remember one at Gulfstream that was a Philly Sprinter. And I believe, long story short, I think in her career she's won like 4 times from 20 starts. I'm pretty sure I bet her 4 times in my life and it's been all 4 of those wins.
See? It's a thing.
So, yeah, I'll believe in that theory. Well, anyway, Garnett, we will flip a little later on the card. We got some featured races to discuss. And, you know, we'll get to race 7 and race 8. But let's start further back. I just have to hear it again this week because Ray already bashed my theory last week. So I'm back to it this week. Race 9, we got the free-for-all pace. And, okay, come on, Garnett, you listen to my show. I've tried to beat Jimmy Frey 4 weeks in a row. I finally used him last week. He does get the job done. So what do we do with him this week?
I mean, did you see last week's race? 51-4 with a 25-1 kicker. He was gapped out at the half. What do we do with him? I mean, this looks like an easier race than last week's, doesn't it?
He was 11.25 back at the halfway time last time and came home in 25-1 to win at 3-5.
You take the 40 cents on the dollar or you watch the race. What are you going to try and beat him with here?
I don't think I'll try to beat him, but I was hopeful for, I was hopeful for fun at the beach underneath.
Massive chalk fest. That exactly would be paying $450 probably.
I was of the optimistic belief that Wheels on Fire would be the second choice, but I guess given the current form and post six, he's probably third or fourth choice.
I mean, right? Do you want me to tell you that there's a horse that has the possibility of beating him? I think it would be fun at the beach, right? Because it's his second start over the track. He kind of, after Jimmy passed him in the lane, he kind of dug in, only got beat a length, right? But he seems to be a trip horse, and he doesn't really typically leave, so what trip can he get that's going to beat him? I think he would have to be in his pocket turning for home, and I don't know that that's going to happen. Poseidon Sealster comes in from Yonkers. I mean, you know, he beat Tattoo Artist four starts back, right? He's in some good races, but, you know, off current form, I don't know that he stacks up to Jimmy Freight. I don't think he does. It's always a horse race, but, you know, and Jimmy next week is going to London, right, for the Camluck Classic, so... I don't think they're not going to want to empty the tank, but I think he just wins anyway without emptying the tank.
Well, how about this as a question, Elise Garnett? Per the morning line, Jimmy Freight at 6-5, Fun at the Beach 3-1. So we might argue that's the second choice. 4-1 Poseidon Sealster versus 5-1 Wheels on Fire. Wheels on Fire has to be a shorter price than Poseidon Sealster, right?
I don't know. I think they'll be pretty close. Actually, I think they'll be pretty close. Wheels got the outside six hole, right? So, I don't know.
And a week off and 0-4 in the most recent times. Two was odds on choices, you know, floated up a bit. The last two, obviously, with Jimmy Freight taking more money.
I think people will bet Poseidon a little bit. But, yeah, you might be right. Wheels will probably be third choice. That would make sense. He always gets bet, right? I think he's never been higher than 7-2 in his last six starts. And he was favored over Jimmy Freight more than once. Like three times in the last six races. And he didn't beat him in any of those starts. And he was favored over him every time.
Well, I will either take the 2-1 exacta if it's paying anything, which it probably won't be. But if I had Jimmy Freight at like 1-2 to this little parlay we got building, that's now a four-leg parlay for like 2-1 value now.
Yeah. The trick would be trying to keep all that money in my pocket, wait until I get to that race. I might lose it in the slots before the ninth. Who knows?
Well, we'll flip back a couple of early races here. Race 7, another SBOA final. This is a three-year-old Colton Gelding trot for $121,000. And this one, we have a favorite in the form of Twinbee Archie there from post 6 at 5-2. Duly Resolved is at 3-1. Which direction did you go here, Garnett? One of those two or someone else?
One of those two. This is pretty interesting to me. Duly Resolved to me. Last week at 4-5 didn't look fully cranked, and it didn't look like there was a great sense of urgency to win that race. He came on nicely to be second. I think they got what they needed out of it. But Twinbee Archie was really impressive to me. Like I think he was raced conservatively on purpose, and you know, six by nine at the half. It wasn't a particularly fast half. 58-3. He swung off cover turning for home, and he accelerated fast to get up to the leaders and trotted a 26-1 kicker to get the job done. I mean, I think he can only be better off that race. You know, I like Duly Resolved a lot, but I think based on what I saw last week, I think you got to lean to Twinbee Archie.
Oh, I will agree with you there, Garnett, on the top end. But, okay, this time if I get this exact home, I should get a better price. How about the 10 Explosion underneath? And ended up in that same race as Twinbee Archie and ended up being the one into the outer flow first over. As you mentioned, a slower half there. Ended up with the lead, actually, top of the stretch. And obviously did get caught late by Twinbee Archie. But if they could go 1-2 again, Explosion is 15-1 on the morning line, which is a bigger number than I would have suspected. But obviously post-10 definitely does not help.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't like him at all from post 10, but you're gonna get paid if he's in there, right? So that's the risk reward part of this part of that bet, I guess. But this field to me is too strong to back him at post 10. I'll give you a horse I like maybe to hit the very bottom of the exotics, the third or fourth, is the 8 Star Power Hanover. I liked him last week off the qualifier on May 6th. He really, really trotted home strongly. You can't see it particularly because he was sixth, 6.5 lengths behind at the three quarters, was only beaten 5.25 at the wire. So he didn't pick up a lot of ground, but he swung widest when Twinbee Archie was really turning it on in a 26-2 final quarter. And I was impressed that he managed to pass horses when they were going that fast. So, you know, McClure was on him last week. He put him on the front. I don't know that that's where he necessarily wants to be. He couldn't hold them off. He's only beaten 2¾ lengths to Twin B. Archie. Now you get Samuel Filion because Bob goes to Drinks at Home, the other Luke Lay horse who finished fifth last week. Nobody's going to bet Samuel Filion at all at Mohawk. And this horse could sneak into the try or the super and really make it pay.
Yeah, that horse is 10-1 on the morning line, and I would have to think it's going to be a pretty good number. So definitely could be one worth looking at underneath. In the Garnett, we have one more SBOA final, race 8. 3-year-old Colton Gelding Pacers are left for 122,000. A field of 10 here, and we have a couple of them in here, including Stonebridge Helios and Bob Loblaw at 5-2 and 3-1, respectively. Both coming off of victories last week in respective divisions of this SBOA series. And who do you like here, Garnett?
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting showdown. I went to Bob Loblaw. I think he was pretty impressive in the lane last week. I know he got a pretty good breather in the third quarter, 28-2. But Stonebridge Helios got a bigger breather in his race. And I just like the way Bob pulled away in the stretch. I don't know that being on the front end's necessarily his thing, but he impressed me, you know, with the 50 and 3 mile. Either of these two are really good horses. The other horse you kind of got to look at is Chucky Hanover, moving from the 9 hole to the 6 hole. He was raced conservatively last week, and he was pretty impressive coming from 6th to 3rd. He was beaten 3 lengths, but, I mean, where was he going to, you know, how much closer could he get in a 26-2 final quarter, right? I think the impressive race to me was when I unfortunately bet against him 2 starts back in the Spring Series final. He made front, took a tuck, so he was in the pocket. And going to the 3 quarters, he was 3rd, and there was, you know, the 2 horses battling in front of him were pretty much even. McDonnell was on cover. He didn't want it. He swung him 3 wide early, which you don't see often. The outside horse was not backing up at that point, Sports Secret. McDonnell did not want that cover. And sorry, that wasn't Sports Secret. That was, I think it was On Top Rain Man. But either way, he made an early 3 wide move and just basically imposed his will coming down the lane to win that race easily. So if there's going to be one that might upset them, it might be Chucky Hanover. And I think he's going to be a lot closer early this time. You see in his previous 4 starts this year, he was always 1st or 2nd at the half. So I think post position kind of dictated his tactics last week. He draws the best post on the track right now. Post 6 has been the best post in Mohawk for years. And I think he's in with a real shot.
I believe, Garnett, that race was the last time you were on the show, and I believe we were both semi-against Chucky Hanover that night as well when he won at 3-1 there.
Yeah, I mean, we've been wrong before, and it'll happen again, I suppose.
I don't get creative here at all. My top two were 5-4. Stonebridge Helios over Bob Loblaw, and before we wrap up, Garnett, I'll throw it back to you again to ask my favorite question of all. Stonebridge Helios, 5-2 on the morning line, 1-9 last week. Bob Loblaw, 3-1 on the morning line, 2.45 last week to the dollar. Who's favorite at post time? What are the prices?
7-5 co-favorites.
Oh, come on. That's the easy way out. Who's got the extra dollar?
I'll go Bob Loblaw. He's 6-5 versus 9-5 because based mostly just on the faster race. People like speed. They like betting fast horses, right? I don't know if it'll be justified. I guess we'll find out. But, you know. We got a Grand Circuit and a Super Final winner, and Stonebridge Helios, also a Grand Circuit winner last year. So, I don't know. I mean, I could see these two battling to the wire and with an inch or two between them at the wire, potentially. But don't forget about Chucky Hanover. I think he's got a shot to upset them.
I mean, to be fair, it seems like, at least from a betting board perspective, Bob Loblaw came out of the tougher race last week. I mean, you get him at 2.45 as your favorite. Then you've got 4-1 on Ron out of the same race, 7-2 Chucky Hanover out of the same race, and 3-1 on Macho Phil out of the same race. So I'm not sure how much you can read into the 1-9 on Stonebridge Helios last week. So that's why my first initial reaction was just the 1-9 to go with Stonebridge Helios. But I might have to agree with your logic that they both did it basically from the front end, and 150-3 is faster than 151-2. They do both kick home in an identical 26-2s though. So I will go Bob Loblaw as well though.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, obviously, some of these other odds are going to be nowhere close. There's no chance that Macho fills him anywhere near 3-1 at post time. because these two horses are going to take the bulk of the money. They're going to take over 50% of the pool, so nobody can be 3-1.
I feel like it's been said before on the show, but trivia question that I'm sure you can answer very easily. Bob Loblaw, what do we know about his trainer and driver, or trainer and owner?
His trainer and owner is the illustrious Ken B. Middleton Jr., who's the track announcer at Woodbine Mohawk Park.
And we definitely did get some pretty good calls from Ken, or from Ken last year when this horse won. So we will look forward to hopefully a good call on Saturday night if he gets the job done.
We should also give a shout out to his co-breeder, a very dear friend of mine who passed away a couple of years ago, Bill Galvin, who's in the Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame and was promoting horse racing well into his 80s. One of the nicest people you would ever want to meet in your life. And it's good. He would have been just thrilled to see the success of this horse. And it's kind of sad to see that Bill's not around to see Bob race, but he's well missed. That's for sure.
Yeah. Bob Loblaw definitely found his spots the right way last year. Only 3 wins last year, but still made $230,000 plus.
He picked the right times to come up big. That's for sure.
And this is definitely a chance to come up big here as well, to pick up a $60,000 share of the purse. Or if not, Stonebridge Chilios nearly made $300,000 last year. Could definitely help kickstart his year as well. So good showdown in that 8th race on Saturday night. But with that, Garnett, that will just about wrap up our looking over here of the 11, 12? I believe it's 12. Isn't it 12 race program Saturday night?
11.
Nope, it is 11. 11 race program.
I had to scan. I should have remembered because, I mean, obviously I handicapped and wrote them all, but.
Well, an 11 race program at Woodbine Mohawk. Definitely some good action for you to take a look at after the completion of the Preakness card at Pimlico. There'll be action at the Meadowlands as well. We're in action down at Rosecroft. We're in action at Freehold again. Once again, my great thanks to James Witherite and Ray Catolo for filling in for me at Freehold and Rosecroft respectively this weekend. And Garnett, thank you very much as always for coming on the show.
The pleasure was all mine. Glad had her. And as always, go Bills.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Garnett, that's something. Oh, sorry. We got a 30-second detour here. I forgot what the most exciting thing of my entire week was in terms of sports. My Orlando Magic, number one overall pick next year. Woohoo!
There you go, man. There you go. I mean, they could turn it around pretty quick with a number one pick. They got some decent young players. You know, the future's looking up.
Also, I don't actually recall who, what, when, where, how this happened. Hopefully they don't find out, because then they'll probably like unfollow it just because they realize it was an error or something. But as a good useless fact, the Orlando Magic have 1.6 million followers. They follow 1.2 thousand accounts, and for some reason I am one of them. So
that's pretty impressive. Well, everybody should follow the Glad Hatter. They must have known that right from the start.
I mean, I think it's just the recognition I get for being a suffering supporter for the past like decade.
There you go, man.
But anyway, racing fans, we will wish you the best of luck this weekend wherever you are wagering, be it at Woodbine Mohawk, the Meadowlands, the Preakness card at Pimlico, Freehold, Rosecroft, anywhere you're wagering this weekend, any sports you're wagering on. We hope all your bets are winning ones, and we'll talk to you next week on First Over with Edison Hatter.